should say you had a much better year than your football team. Bob City's done a great job.
I bet they are all going over the bridge. Hey. Oh, you've lost your audience.
Bankruptcy is not all that exciting.
Appeal 2001, number 2753, Qualitech Steel, SBQ.
Good morning.
Versus Precision Industry, Inc.
Morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Your Honors, when Qualitech Steel filed its Chapter 11 bankruptcy case in the spring of 1999, the first mortgage indebtedness on the steel plant was $380 million. The steel mill failed and was subsequently sold as part of the Chapter 11 case. The amount paid for the steel mill pursuant to 363 was $180 million. Leaving a $200 million deficiency faced by those mortgagees. Now, following the sale, the Precision lease, which is the subject of this appeal issue, was raised. Precision, the appellee in this case, had entered into an unrecorded lease with the debtor. Was actually executed after the mortgages had been executed, and the lease was never recorded. So the question today is whether that lease or the possessory rights under that lease survived 363 sale. Now the district court below...
Does that make a difference whether it was recorded or not?
I really don't think it does because, in fact, it was executed subsequent to the mortgagees. No dispute here today, I don't think, that the lease was subordinate to the mortgages. The fact it was unrecorded is not relevant today, no. The district court below correctly identified the issue today, which is, I think, squarely a legal issue, but unfortunately reached the wrong result. The issue is whether a lessee that was party to a rejected lease under 11 U.S.C. Section 365 retains its right to possession even after the assets have been sold in a 363F sale. The district court, Your Honors, erroneously found that 365H and 363F are ambiguous and conflicting. Then, faced with what it perceived as an irreconcilable conflict between the code sections, found that 365H was more specific and trumped, in the court's words, trumped 363F. The two code sections are not in conflict and are not inconsistent. In fact, they each deal with separate, distinct transactions. 365, based on its title, deals with the rejection of leases.
Isn't that exactly what happened after the sale?
Yes.
So why don't you move over to 365H at that point and, if it were, you know, dissect out the possessory interest that the lease represents from whatever other rights it may have of a more contractual nature and follow 365?
Because Your Honor, that would ignore the effect of the 363 sale. Had there not been a sale of property, there's assets are not always sold in a bankruptcy case. There could have been a reorganization. Had the lease simply been rejected, we wouldn't be dealing with 363. 365 would be the only applicable code section, and the rights of the tenant under 365H would clearly be applicable.
So your question point is that 363F allows the stripping of various interests.
Yes.
Prior to, or as part of the sale, if you will, once they've been stripped, they aren't there anymore to reject or
correct.
Accept.
Correct. The same as any other junior lien.
Yeah.
And that's really the fundamental question before the court is whether the interest of a lessee, in this case an unrecorded lease, mm-hmm. but in any event junior to mortgages, somehow has greater rights than a junior a mortgagee would have in this case. Now I was saying 363 deals with sales, which is a distinct transaction from rejection of a contract. The rejection of a contract under bankruptcy law is to relieve the debtor or the trustee of its burdensome covenants under that contract. A sale is a different transaction altogether. And in fact, the protections there for party and interest are in 363 themselves, which provides a means for requesting adequate protection, et cetera.
If this lease could stand in front of the queue, how much is it worth?
Excuse me?
I said if this lease could represent the first claim on this $180 million instead of the third, how much is it worth?
Your Honor, I'm not really sure how to answer the question, how much is the lease worth? The question...
Well, it's obviously worth more than $8, you know, the dollar in your rent, because no one would be fighting about it if it were $8. The warehouse itself was worth quite a bit.
The question here, well, okay, that's a legitimate question. The real issue here is there is a warehouse, in fact, out. The plant has been mothballed, and we're looking for another seller, undoubtedly for an even lesser amount. In the meantime, it's effectively a cloud on the title. So what's it worth? I guess it's worth whatever the buyers are willing to pay to remove the cloud from the title. And I'm not prepared to tell you what that amount is.
No, sure. I mean, that would be a factual question. Yeah.
The other argument, Your Honor, is the effect of a 363F sale should be identical to a state court foreclosure action. There's no question, I don't believe, that had this property been liquidated in a state court foreclosure, the mortgages would have been foreclosed, the tenant would have been ejected. But in effect, what Judge Hamilton said, in fact, he said it fairly pointedly, is that the effect under 363F is different. Well, the result of that, Your Honor, is that the tenant whose landlord has the misfortune of filing bankruptcy ends up with greater rights than had the property simply gone through a foreclosure. And we would submit to you that the result ought to be exactly the same.
To what extent are you making an argument about the timeliness of Precision's effort to preserve its leasehold?
That was our second argument. The motion to sell under 363 was noticed. I think the record makes that clear. Everyone had notice of the sale. By its terms, it was to be a sale free and clear of liens and interest under 363. Bankruptcy practitioners are familiar with what the effect of that could be on property interest. And it's our position that Precision did have notice of that motion, had an obligation to come into court, challenge that motion, protect its interest if it thought it had any, and failing that, to at least at a minimum appeal that sale order, neither of which were ever done. So as a secondary argument, we also feel that Precision in this case has waived its rights and should be barred from pursuing this matter under the doctrine of res judicata.
But under the sale agreement, there was some provision for, and indeed there were, continuing negotiations about whether this lease was going to be assumed or not. So why isn't it the case that Precision didn't know until at least December or so that it wasn't going to work out?
That is an interesting issue, and I've had many conversations since then with bankruptcy practitioners about this pitfall. And the best I can answer it is to go back to, again, the distinction between 365 and rejecting contracts versus a sale of property and stripping off possessory property interests of the tenant. And I think the sale order probably could have been, or the sale motion, the documents probably could have been more artfully worded, frankly. I didn't draft those documents. But
you're stuck with them.
Well, I'm stuck with them. And I think though the question is, you know, is there anything wrong with preserving the right to, what would have happened had the buyers decided they liked this lease? It's a favorable lease. They could have assumed it, because they reserved the right to do that after the sale. And what would you have had then? You would have effectively revived Precision's rights under the lease. And so it's correct to say that under this procedure, the buyer really was left with an option. The property, by virtue of the 363 sale, had been stripped of Precision's possessory interest, as well as all other junior interests, and yet they retained the right under 365 to subsequently assume that lease. And
did they retain it under 365, or did they retain it under the contract?
Under 365.
Okay.
I think unless Your Honor has any other questions, I'm finished. Thank you.
McDavid.
May it please the court, my name is John McDavid and I represent the appellees in this case. I would phrase the issue a little bit different than counsel did. I would say that the issue is not whether, not necessarily whether a 363 sale always trumps the 365 rights of the lessee, or whether the 365 lessee rights trump the 363 sale. For us, the issue is whether in this particular case, under these particular circumstances, and with this particular sale order, which code section trumps the other.
Well, why isn't 363E a sufficient means of protecting the interests of a lessee like Precision?
Why isn't 363?
E. Subsection E, yes, oh. I had exactly the same.
Well, Your Honor, I guess in the first instance, what we have here is Precision sitting there getting a sale order, first a proposed sale order, then a sale order that specifically carved out 365 treatment of executory contracts and leases. And because it did that, it had no indication at all that its rights may be prejudiced at some point. 365A1H2 is the specific subsection which preserves the rights of the lessee and its leasehold interests. I think something can be said for the fact that it takes four levels of subsections down before you get to the very specific treatment that they're talking about here, that Congress looked at this and said, we've got a very specific treatment of a very particular, one particular creditor, and if you look at it, there has to be six things have to come together before that subsection can be invoked. First, there has to be unexpired lease, has to be real property, the debtor has to be the lessor, there has to be a rejection, and then you get down to the subsection and it says, if all those come together and the lease has commenced, then the lessee may maintain its leasehold interests. We think, and we agree with the district court, that there is a tension between these two sections, 363 and 365A1H2. And because 365A1H2 is so much more specific, the general rule of statutory construction would have the court rule in our favor, just like the district court did.
But of course, that's not necessarily so if you read 363F mm-hmm. along with other parts of 363 itself, including E, and if you also look at the overall bankruptcy policy of trying to maximize the recovery from assets of the estate. You can certainly sell property for a higher price if it's been stripped free and clear of liens and other interests. And then those become subject to the 363E protection. So you come in, you say, you know, we need this protection. And so 365 at that point operates for situations where the property isn't being sold, where the debtor still has it, where there's an issue, just as there often is, as to whether a particular obligation is going to be continued or not.
That may be true, Your Honor, but it's not the same level of protection which Congress gave the lessee under 365.
Well, if you assume the answer to the question before us, which is that 365 creates an unarticulated exception to 363F, since I take it you're not quarreling with the proposition that a lease is an interest.
Your Honor, we do have an alternative argument here, and that is that because under bankruptcy law, the debtor and the debtor's estate take only the property that was the debtor's property before the filing of the petition, and the court has to look to state law to define those property rights. Under Indiana law, going back to the Mark versus North decision in 1900, the Indiana Supreme Court stated that a leasehold interest is personal property. It's personal property of the lessee. Because it's personal property of the lessee, that part of the estate never passed into the bankruptcy estate. It stays with the lessee. All the debtor maintains is this reversionary interest. And that's all that could have been sold under the sale order, even if the sale order were framed or phrased in a manner that would have been more suiting to New Qualitech's liking. So we do take issue with the fact that this could have been sold. The leasehold interest could have been sold under a 363 sale.
Mm-hmm. Do you think contract rights don't create personal property interests?
Do I think contract rights don't create personal property interest?
Right, I mean, the whole bankruptcy estate is, in a sense, a collection of situations where other people have claims on some of the property of the debtor. So you're saying that leaseholds are set are different somehow.
Yes, Your Honor. Right.
Property exists.
I am. I'm saying they're different as defined under state law, and I'm saying Congress treated them differently when enacting this very specific code section.
Well, this may seem very simplistic to you, but on its face, Section 365H seems to apply only when the debtor left or remains in possession of the property. And it seems to me we'd have to rewrite the statute in order to say that it applies here, where the property has been sold to a third party.
Your Honor, the sale order by its terms extended the right of the debtor to assume or reject the executory contracts and unexpired leases. In doing so, it recognized that only under the code, only the debtor had that right. So technically, the debtor would still have to be in possession in order to assume or reject those executory contracts and unexpired leases. Here, that's what the debtor, in conjunction with New Qualitech, eventually did by its actions, if not by its words. And I don't think the rejection of the lease is being controverted here by counsel.
But you're not saying New Qualitech is the debtor.
No, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. To put it as the district court below did, the New Qualitech here, as in the record reflects, that New Qualitech is in essence an entity set up by the mortgagee banks, the pre-petition senior lenders, who are really the purchaser. They had an option. They had an option to acquire the property or go after their rights under the state mortgage foreclosure law or the state bankruptcy law or the federal bankruptcy law. In this case, they chose the federal bankruptcy law, and with that, they got various benefits associated with an asset sale, an ongoing business, the benefit to assume beneficial contracts to it. But with that comes the various detriments, and one of the detriments is that you have got to, that the leasehold interest of a lessee is protected specifically under 365A1H2. It's an issue that is of first impression. At the time of the sale order, there was nothing, there was no recorded decision that would have given precision any idea that its interest would have been obfuscated like this. There was nothing in the sale order. The sale order specifically carved out 365, and then the treatment between the parties, between Precision and New Qualitech, as they continued the negotiations, all along the way, there was no indication to Precision that it could be booted out of that land at any time as soon as the New Qualitech wanted. We think the district court got it right here. We think the bankruptcy court in Illinois and the In Re Churchill Properties matter got it right. Having chosen bankruptcy, a bankruptcy sale, the New Qualitech has to take the good with the bad. And in this case, we ask that the court uphold the district court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Does Mr. Malloy have any time left?
Yes.
You have a minute and 10 seconds. You want to use it?
I think the only other comment perhaps I did not mention, Your Honors, is that Judge Hamilton actually did cite to an interesting case, the Hotel Governor Clinton case, is cited by Judge Hamilton, which was a case decided under the 1898 Bankruptcy Act, which I think fairly well held that a lessee's interest in bankruptcy, at least under that act, could be terminated by a bankruptcy court in very similar circumstances. And so I would add that to my argument that there's nothing in the new code, and particularly under 365 or 365, indicating Congress's intent to change what had been the law under the prior Bankruptcy Act.
Well, thank you, Mr. Malloy. Thank you, Mr. McDavid. And the case will be taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until Tuesday.